Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host.
Today on the podcast, I'm talking with Simadip Kaur, an ophthalmology trainee who works in the Kent, Surrey and Sussex Deanery. So Sim, thank you very much for joining me today to talk about herbal medicines.
Thanks, Sunil. Thanks for speaking with me today on this very interesting topic.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like it's something that patients are increasingly reporting curiosity about, and actually some are already taking themselves. In your experience, what herbal medicines have you heard of patients using? What ocular conditions are they using herbal treatments for?
So I've heard of things like bilberry, patients telling me about fennel seeds, ginkgo biloba supplements, as well as other dietary supplements like cod liver oil and a range of other things that you can get in a lot of health foods. And they're using it for, dry eyes, blepharitis, as well as for their AMD. And some diabetic patients feel that, some of these supplements help their overall diabetic control as well. So it's quite a broad range of conditions, I would say.
In your article that, we're going to be talking about today, I think, you touched on three main, what I would call herbal remedies, or, well, not necessarily herbal remedies, but non-traditional treatments that are seeing increasing interest within ophthalmology, starting off with CBD. So I was just wondering if you could tell me and the listeners, what is CBD? And, when I think of CBD, I think of cannabis. But what is the difference between CBD and cannabis?
That's a very good question, Sunil. And it's something I didn't fully understand either. And it can be confusing. And sometimes both those terms are used incorrectly and interchangeably. So cannabis is the generic term that covers marijuana, hemp, and cannabinoids. They're all derived from the cannabis sativa plant. Marijuana is the mixture of the dried flowers, leaves, tops of the plant, and it's mainly used for its stimulating effects. And cannabinoids are the opioid-like chemicals in the plant, of which there are hundreds of them, and a lot of them are under investigation for potential use as pharmaceutical products. And the main cannabinoids are tetrahydrocannabinol and cannabidiol, which is CBD. And what they do is they act on cannabinoid receptors throughout the body, and that's how they exert their effects. Now, the predominant cannabinoid is THC, which is very psychoactive, and it gives a recreational high. And the second most abundant cannabinoid is CBD, and it's known for its non-psychoactive sort of relaxant effects on the various receptors in the body. And then hemp, on the other hand, is a variety of the cannabis plant, and it's used for producing, fibrous products. And it has more of the CBD component rather than the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is also known as THC.
Sure. I mean, in my own personal experience, I'm seeing, adverts on buses, at petrol stations and elsewhere, advertising CBD products, oils, drinks, and all sorts. But, what are the reported health benefits for CBD? And, is there any evidence behind that?
Yeah, that's a very valid point. And you're right, I've also noticed, a lot of adverts, especially when you go to health food stores. The reported benefits of CBD include things like helping with anxiety, insomnia, chronic pain. It has been studied for arthritic and neuropathic pain in animal studies. And it's shown to, have helped for those conditions. But we don't actually know the most effective therapeutic dose of CBD for any particular medical condition. And it's hard to sort of make any generalizations and apply it, to the population. As you said, it's available in, various forms, oils, creams, patches. Again, there's isn't really any hard evidence for its use in most conditions, apart from three conditions where it has been approved by NICE for use in the UK.
Okay, and what are those three conditions?
So the first one is for childhood epilepsy, specifically two subtypes of childhood epilepsy, Lennox-Gastaut and Dravet syndrome, which have been which are very hard to treat with current pharmaceutical agents. And actually, the evidence comes from three randomized control trials, were double-blinded placebo-controlled trials that showed significant reduction in the number of seizures in children who received a CBD-derived medication. And also NICE, so NICE has approved that, in addition to also approving two other medications, one for intractable chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. It's a drug called Nabilone, and there's also another oral mucosal spray for use in multiple sclerosis-related spasticity, and it's got equal ratios of CBD and also the psychoactive delta-9 THC.
I mean, that's really interesting. But I've noticed that none of those conditions are ophthalmological.
Correct.
when I've been to meetings, when I've spoken to colleagues, I have heard about some link between treatment for glaucoma or treatment for IOP and CBD. So what's the story there?
Yes, you're right. So with regards to ophthalmology, one of the first few studies looking at cannabis or marijuana even, and its effects at lowering intraocular pressure was done in the 70s. A group of healthy young men were given some marijuana to smoke, and their intraocular pressure was measured afterwards. And the study did demonstrate a reduction in most of the intraocular pressures in that group of patients, but the effects were short-lasting, only between 3 to 4 hours, and these patients also developed tolerance. Additionally, you also have to think about how they're going to sustain these effects long-term, and that would involve having to smoke, you know, several thousand joints per year, which comes at a significant cost as well. And notwithstanding, you know, side effects in terms of lung damage from smoke inhalation. So those are some of the other things to consider, in addition to, you know, drug-induced psychosis, in keeping with the, you know, hallucinations and mood disruption that we know of as a side effect of marijuana. A lot of the research into looking at cannabis or marijuana for controlling intraocular pressure and glaucoma didn't really compare with the other research that was being conducted at the time into other pharmaceutical agents, which have been proven and, you know, which has since been widely adopted in glaucoma care. So research on the link between cannabis or marijuana with intraocular pressure has sort of pretty much dwindled away.
Well, it sounds like you're not recommending clinicians to be advising their patients to take marijuana then in treatment for their glaucoma.
Absolutely not, Sunil. No, absolutely not.
Okay. So the next topic we need to discuss is turmeric.
Mm-hmm.
I have had patients absolutely insistent that turmeric has cured their ocular surface disease, cured their psoriasis, and a whole host of other conditions. And, you know, these patients are absolutely insistent and passionate, even trying to persuade me to take it. Now, when I've looked it up on the internet, I'm reading about turmeric, curcumin, and a few other terminologies that I'm reading as well. What are these terms? What is curcumin? What is turmeric? And, you know, is there any evidence behind these claims?
Yeah, again, a really good point. And similarly, I was also confused prior to that, just like with, you know, the whole CBD, cannabis, cannabinoid that we discussed before. So turmeric, as you know, and most people know, is a very familiar spice that is used for in foods. And it comes from the curcuma longa plant. And it's actually the root of the plant, the rhizome, which contains curcuminoids. These are the active chemical components consisting mainly of curcumin, which makes up over 80% of the active components, with lessening amount of other active curcuminoids. And curcumin is what's responsible for the yellow color in the turmeric plant and the turmeric powder, which is, you know, subsequently used as coloring and flavoring in foods. And it's known to have a range of molecular targets in the body. For exerting its effect, it's been shown to have anti-inflammatory effects through its action on the cyclooxygenase 2 pathway, along with effects on prostaglandins and interleukins. It also scavenges reactive oxygen species, and in a study on corneal neovascularization, it was shown to also suppress the release of VEGF and basic fibroblast growth factor in mouse cornea studies. So it's mainly its anti-inflammatory effects, which, you know, makes it really popular for patients and, you know, people to use it and, you know, adopt it in their diet for all sorts of aches and pains and things like that.
That's slightly surprising. So it sounds to me as though you're saying that there is actually evidence that turmeric is potentially a potent anti-inflammatory agent.
Yes, there is some suggestion that it does live up to, you know, the expectations that it has and is able to provide anti-inflammatory effects in the body, both in mouse studies as well as in some human studies. There was a mouse study where it was found, curcumin supplements were found to reduce the insulin level in diabetic mice. So I think, you know, the researchers are planning to translate that into human studies at some point, but at the moment I haven't come across anything just yet.
Sure. So specifically in ophthalmology, mm-hmm. are you aware of any, you know, ocular diseases in which turmeric or curcumin is particularly useful for?
Yes, Sunil. There's two main ones. Glaucoma, firstly, has been studied. The relationship between curcumin and glaucoma is mainly its neuroprotective effect, and also other studies on macular edema, whether it's diabetic or non-diabetic related. So with regards to glaucoma, a group of researchers developed a specific curcumin-loaded nanocarrier, you know, in combination with various surfactants and stabilizers, so that they could administrate it as an eye drop on rodent models. And they found that actually the retinal ganglion cell layer density was preserved in the treatment group compared to the control group. So that was quite encouraging. With regards to macular edema, there's been a few studies from various groups looking at oral administration of curcumin delivery system, controlling macular edema that you see in central serous retinopathy, and they found that it, you know, didn't have any adverse side effects, was well tolerated by patients, and also demonstrated a statistically significant difference, an improvement in retinal thickness after 12 months. That's one of the longest studies that I've come across. Some of the other ones have been a little bit more short-term, between 3 to 6 months, but still have shown improvement.
That's amazing. Well, maybe it's something to look out for in the future then. So, you know, moving on to saffron, you know, that's something that I've read about very recently with regards to AMD. Could you tell us a bit about, you know, the evidence behind saffron and AMD?
It's another wonderful spice, similar color to turmeric, and it's meant to have also very good antioxidant and anti-inflammatory benefits. So again, so very similar to the turmeric. And in terms of its relationship with AMD, there was a randomized control trial that was published last year, where an oral solution of saffron was given to patients who had mild and moderate dry AMD in a placebo control cross-sectional study. And they found that there was a modest improvement of vision in these patients. And they also conducted a multifocal ERG in these patients and found that there was a reduced latency in the readings at the end of the 3-month period. Now, that is obviously quite a short-term study. And similarly, some of the other ones with regards to saffron and its effect on AMD have also been short term. But what we can take away from it is that it does have a good safety profile. And I think we need, you know, to wait to see if there is more that comes out of it in the future.
That's, you know, incredible. So Sim, you know, it seems as though, you know, you've got an incredibly in-depth knowledge about lots of herbal treatments, you know, even more than what we've discussed about, the ones we've discussed already today. So, you know, I'm wondering, do you recommend herbal treatments to your patients when you see them in the clinic?
Thanks, Sunil. It's just my curiosity, I think, that leads me down these paths. But in terms of recommending any of what we've discussed so far, I would say generally, you know, as a clinician, you when you have the opportunity, I would always just try and, you know, recommend a healthy, balanced diet to my patients, especially in the medical retina clinic. You know, tell them to encourage them to give up smoking if they are smokers, and, you know, promote the use, promote them, you know, taking supplements that we know are proven, such as the AREDS formula for AMD. But in terms of, you know, suggesting that they take curcumin tablets or turmeric capsules, it's not exactly, I wouldn't say I do that, but I do have the knowledge and, you know, some background knowledge on those topics to discuss them in a bit further detail with my patients should they bring it up, which they do actually from time to time.
Yeah, so then, you know, if they do ask you whether they should be taking herbal medications, or if they ask you, you know, if they say to you, should I take turmeric for my condition, what do you say?
If they would like to, you know, use it more in their diet and in their cooking, then I don't see any problem with that, because lots of people do that. However, if they were thinking about, you know, going out to buy specific, you know, tablets and asking, you know, details about, you know, what strengths should they take, etc., then I would always, you know, encourage them to discuss it with their GP as well, just to ensure that there is no interactions with the other medications that they may be, you know, taking at the same time, and to try and explain the evidence behind it, if, you know, as much as I know. And similarly, at the same time, you have a duty as a clinician to tell your patients about the other available and validated treatment options for their eye condition that's NICE approved. And at the end of the day, encourage them to make an informed decision.
I mean, that sounds very pragmatic and sensible. One final question that is just for really my own personal curiosity. Do you take any herbal medications yourself?
No, I don't. But, you know, I do take the occasional vitamin supplement when I can remember. And I try and incorporate a little bit of everything in my diet. In fact, I have been wanting to try turmeric latte. And I think I will, you know, finally do it one day. Now that we have some time in our hands with the whole change in our work schedule due to the coronavirus. So I think I might actually give that a go.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and speaking with me.
Thanks a lot, Sunil. I really enjoyed this.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work, or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.